Hello and welcome to Radio Prague. My name is Ian Willoughby. We start the program with the news. The Czech Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek is meeting his British counterpart Tony Blair on Monday at the start of a two-day visit to London. The two leaders are expected to discuss the European Union Constitution, further expansion of the EU, and the Czech military presence in Iraq. Mr. Paroubek will also decorate Czech war veterans at the country's embassy in London. A group of former dissidents have hit back at a recent statement by Czech President Václav Klaus, who said that unelected non-governmental organizations had a dangerous influence on public life. In a letter to the president, the dissidents said discrediting NGOs was an attack on fundamental democratic principles guaranteed by the Constitution. Signatories include Bishop Václav Mali, Rabbi Karol Sidon, and former Interior Minister Jan Rummel. The chairman of the right-wing opposition Civic Democrats, Mirek Topolánek, has described the European Constitution as shit, using the English word, in an interview in Lidové noviny. Mr. Topolánek also said the Constitution was an incredible mess and that nobody who read it could vote for it if they were sober. The founder of the Civic Democrats, President Václav Klaus, has been described as the only head of state in the EU openly opposed to the document. He says he's confident France will vote no in a referendum on the issue next weekend. The chairman of the Czech lower house, Lubomír Zaorálek, has called on North Korea to return to six-nation talks on the country's nuclear program. Mr. Zaorálek, leading a delegation of Czech MPs on a three-day visit to Pyongyang, said international negotiations were the best way to calm the situation and find a solution. He said the Czech Republic could serve as a mediator between North Korea and Czech allies, such as the United States. The Sokol Sports and Exercise Movement has been celebrating the 80th anniversary of the opening of its headquarters, the Tyrshov Dům building in Prague's Malostrana. President T.G. Masaryk was among those who backed its construction, and 14,000 people attended the opening on May 22, 1925. A Sokol official at the time said only two buildings in Prague had been built with that much love and sacrifice, the National Theatre and Tyrshov Dům. And finally, the weather. Temperatures are set to drop slightly to a maximum of around 21 or 22 degrees Celsius over the next couple of days, with cloudy weather and some storms expected. Warmer weather should return towards the end of the week, when we can expect sunshine and temperatures of up to 30 degrees. That's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague and I'm David Vaughan. In today's programme, the row continues between President Klaus and the non-profit sector. When does a good cause become a political lobby? We'll be saying farewell to the Czech Republic's last Soviet MiG fighter jets, and what's being done here to make life easier for the partially sighted. All this and plenty more coming up today, so please stay with us. Last week, at a Council of Europe meeting in Warsaw, the Czech President Václav Klaus warned of what he called the dangerous influence of non-governmental organisations. President Klaus said that we are experiencing what he calls a post-democracy, a society where democracy is being put under pressure by different groups, which, having no mandate from democratic elections, still have ambitions to determine the lives of citizens. But Mr. Klaus's words have upset many people, not just those working in the non-profit sector, but also a group of former dissidents. They described it as an attack on fundamental rights guaranteed by the Constitution and decided to express their grievances in a protest letter. Martin Mikule spoke to one of the authors of the petition, Václav Trojan.
I am among many others who were members of some non-governmental movements or groups during the time of communism. So we are maybe more sensitive to such kind of statements than the others. But we believe that the non-governmental organizations and civic movements are a very important part of the civic society and of the democratic society, and they are playing some kind of feedback to the job of official politicians with the democratic mandate.
But Václav Klaus is right that the representatives of these non-governmental organizations were not elected in general elections. So what is their mandate then?
I think the mandate is well defined by the constitution. Any citizen has the right to express his meaning, has the right to speak, to gather, to express the political opinion. So I think the mandate, the democratic mandate, is not the only legitimation for expression of ideas, of right to demonstrate the ideas, to influence civic society, etc.
I think President Václav Klaus, when he criticized these non-governmental organizations, he meant especially these powerful international organizations active, for example, in the field of environment or human rights. Do you believe that the power of these huge organizations is adequate to the mandate they have?
I believe that the power they have is corresponding with the ideas they are trying to fight for. I personally was very happy that exist such organizations like Amnesty International, because Amnesty International was one of not many organizations which expressed criticism against imprisonment and discrimination of dissidents in the communist society or in the communist state.
Tell me, what do you expect of the president now? Do you really expect that he admits that he was wrong?
Well, I don't expect it too much, but I think it's important that we wrote the last sentence of our letter where it's mentioned that we hope that it's misunderstanding, because the letter was written in very, very special language. There were some terms which nobody understands, like NGOism or human rightism. What it means? What it means, NGOism, if we take in mind that NGO can be some foundation or it can be some organization for the people who like gardening, and on the other hand, non-governmental organizations are also such organizations like Amnesty International. So I hope that it could be some kind of misunderstanding due to very, very strange language which was used by Mr. President.
That was the former dissident Václav Trojan defending the non-profit sector against criticism from President Klaus. You're tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. The Czech Republic's famous fleet of Soviet-made MiG-21 fighter jets flew a final flight at the weekend after 30 years of service. Thousands came out to see the show as well as to greet the MiG's successors, the country's new Gripen fighters from Sweden. How do the planes compare? It's a whole new world. Jan Wellinger has the story.
A JAS-39 Gripen roars across the sky, announcing a changing of the guard. The end of the line for the aging MiG-21 fighters that protected Czech airspace throughout the Cold War and into the new millennium. At the weekend, the last of the MiGs disappeared into the clouds high above the East Bohemian Pardubice region as crowds looked on. It was the end of an era. Comparing the MiG fighters with their successors is, experts say, like rolling a 40-year-old racing car out of the garage in the hopes of beating Michael Schumacher. Quicker, more powerful, and fully digital, the Gripens guarding the Czech Republic now are simply beyond compare. In terms of speed and maneuverability, the MiGs were built for another age. At 2,400 kilometers per hour, the Gripens fly twice as fast, while the onboard radar is good for 100 kilometers, roughly 10 times the range of their MiG predecessors. All of this, of course, comes at a price. It took 10 years for the Czech Republic to negotiate a deal, finally settling on the 14 new jets, and the Swedish Gripens have been leased to the tune of roughly 20 billion crowns, to be paid over 20 years. That's about $820 million. Some have questioned whether the Czech Republic really needed the brand new Gripens, but the Czech Air Force has countered that the price and deal on servicing for the planes was right. It adds that in the age of global terrorism, it would be unthinkable not to employ modern machines. The Gripens, for one, can arrive anywhere in the Czech Republic within 18 minutes. While hopefully they will never be required in an actual terrorist situation, at least they are apparently up to the task. It's their responsibility in any case, now that the MiGs have gone.
Thanks very much to Jan Wellinger there. In the Czech Republic, when a loved one passes away, the grieving family either has the body buried or cremated. A more individualized or personal approach to keeping the memory of a loved one alive is not at hand. but in a year or two, Czechs will have a third choice, to turn the remains of their loved ones into a beautiful, shining gem. Dita Asieru has this report.
The US company LifeGem has been offering this rather unusual service to its clients since 2001. Tom Jasper is from its European headquarters in the Netherlands and explains how the LifeGem is made.
A LifeGem diamond is made using carbon that is present in the ashes that remain after the cremation. But the time we need with a diamond press to press a diamond out of carbon is much shorter than nature does it. Nature takes over millions of years, and a diamond created within a diamond press can be produced within days.
The company's European clientele is slowly beginning to warm up to the idea. In Holland alone, 100 grieving families have ordered the LifeGem, which can cost anywhere between $3,000 and $18,000, depending on its size. Most clients insert the gem into rings or other jewellery. With plans to open up more branches in Central Europe, the LifeGem company has already been testing the waters in Hungary for some 18 months. But, according to the head of the Budapest office, Laszlo Varga, Hungarians have yet to learn to break old habits. So far, only one family has ordered the gem.
If we compare the prices of the funeral, then we could say it is, I shouldn't say competitive, but it is not such an expense which stands out beside the expense of a funeral. So as now the cremation is increasing everywhere, also in Hungary, and I know in the Czech Republic it's really high, the percentage of cremation. We find that the financial consideration is not a problem with LifeGem. It's more the idea of this whole concept of remembering. This is what is new, and this is why people are still waiting.
But what about Czechs? Could they warm up to the idea of turning their loved ones into jewellery, for example? Tom Jasper again.
Choosing a LifeGem is a very personal choice. People will like the idea, other people won't like the idea. We know that, and we have that experience all over the world. Regarding the need to introduce a product that's called LifeGem in Czech Republic, even if we can help one family, giving them the comfort that they think they will have, then already it is worth introducing LifeGem in a certain territory. Regarding the Czech Republic, we know there's a lot of cremation going on. We also know that the economical situation is developing, so we are planning our priorities on introducing LifeGem, and we expect that we want to open an office in the Czech Republic on the midterm, talking about a year or two from now.
Tom Jasper there, ending that unusual report from Dita Asiedu. And now to a look at the week's sport with Ian Willoughby.
We begin today with tennis and the French Open, which got underway on Monday. The draw has been mixed for the Czech players at Roland Garros, with Barbara Strýcová perhaps drawing the toughest opponent, last year's finalist Elena Dementieva of Russia. And 16-year-old Czech women's number one, Nicole Vajdašová, who's ranked 35th in the world, will face Czech qualifier Lucia Šafářová in the first round. Jiří Novák, meanwhile, says he could have faced a tougher opponent than Bjorn Pau of Germany.
I have to say the draw is quite favorable. The main thing is I haven't drawn a clay court specialist in the first round, but I have to say every game, every opponent is very tough in this tournament. It'll be hard, but like I say, the draw has been quite kind to me.
Jiří Novák, who for a long time was Czech men's number one. But this year he's been overtaken by Radek Štěpánek, who is currently ranked 17th in the world. The Karviná-born player, who is 27, faces Thailand's Paradorn Srichapan in the first round at Roland Garros. And he'll have a very famous fan, Czech ice hockey star Jaromír Jágr is in Paris and says he'll be cheering Štěpánek on. Jágr received some good news at the weekend. When x-rays confirmed he wouldn't need surgery on a little finger he broke at the recent Hockey World Championships, which were, of course, won by the Czech Republic. And there was more good news for Czech fans when coach Vladimír Růžička, who had planned to resign, said he could imagine helming the team for the Winter Olympics and the World Championships next year. In football, Milan Baroš should become the first Czech ever to play in the final of the Champions League when his Liverpool play AC Milan in Istanbul this Wednesday. However, the 24-year-old from North Moravia may not start the game, having only scored 2 goals since December. And it could well be the striker's last appearance for Liverpool, where he's reportedly out of favour with the manager. Fellow Czech Vladimír Šmicer is definitely leaving Liverpool after 6 years. The 32-year-old midfielder hasn't been a first-team regular in recent seasons. In the Czech League, with 2 rounds left, the battle for second place and a Champions League qualifier looks set to go right down to the wire. Slavia Prague, Teplice and Olomouc are all in contention. And Liberec too may be in with the shout, if they succeed in having an 8-point penalty for corruption overturned by the Czech Football Association. And finally, the 11th Prague Marathon on Sunday was dominated by runners from Kenya. The men's race was won by Stephen Matebo Cheptot in a time of 2 hours 10 minutes and 42 seconds, while the women's category was won by his compatriot Salina Yebet Koske, who finished in a time of 2 hours 28 minutes and 48 seconds. A record 5,000 runners took part in the race. That's all the sport for today.
Thanks very much, Ian. In the Czech Republic, it's thought that as many as 100,000 people are partially sighted or blind. That number was recently put forward by the organisers of an exhibition aimed at showing new designs of household objects for everyday use by the visually impaired, a task that organisers say is not addressed in the Czech Republic nearly often enough. In today's special, Jan Wellinger looks at the project and visits an institute helping professionals work with the blind.
Over 100 students from 12 different design schools took part in the project titled Design for the Dark, addressing the challenges of the blind. Students created prototypes of objects that included everything from kitchen utensils and practical tools to games and clothing, all ergonomically designed for the non-sighted. Throughout the project, they consulted blind people themselves. And many of them also received training at Charles University's Rehabilitation Institute for the Visually Impaired, located in a leafy part of Prague. I was curious to find out what such training was like, and met instructor Alenka Svobodová, who was kind enough to show me around.
The institute was founded in 1994, and the main thing is education of professionals for visually impaired people. So we are teaching instructors of orientation and mobility, or orientation and mobility teachers, and teachers of activities of daily living for visually impaired people. But beside it, of course, we have got different duties because we belong to a Faculty of Humanities, so sometimes we are giving seminars at this faculty. And beside it, of course, we have got clients in direct work. We're working directly with visually impaired people.
Training takes place in the Institute's observation and teaching facility, where individuals are asked to conduct basic tasks, including simply moving around without sight. The most basic of exercises I found out involves getting used to the dark, pitch black, in which it is impossible to see. My own attempts were shot on night vision videotape, which captured my every step.
What you will see, it's actually darkness only. After you enter the room, you can hold a handle on your right-hand side and continue.
I didn't know it, but going into the dark, I would display typical reactions, deliberate and careful movement and general signs of uncertainty, as well as eyes wide open in search of anything at all. But the darkness was complete.
We're in the darkness now.
Follow my voice, please. I'm just standing somewhere in front of you. You can go forward And now, on your right-hand side, there is a table. And on this table, three models of buildings.
Lenka asked me to examine the models to try and determine three famous buildings in the Czech Republic and Germany. Running my hands over the items, I first found myself at a loss. But then, suddenly, everything clicked.
It's Karlštejn.
Yeah, it is. Ah. Great.
So this would be Hluboká, maybe.
Okay, it is.
Okay. It has these spires. Yes, exactly. They feel like chess pieces. But now, I feel,
okay.
Now I feel better.
Okay.
In that case, this is Brandenburg Gate.
Yes, it is.
Afterwards, Lenka Svobodová explained that the use of such models is one way the Institute tries to bring famous architecture to life. The Institute regularly organizes trips around the country and abroad, places like Austria, Slovenia, and Holland, providing models for some of the places they visit. According to Lenka Svobodová, they can enrich a visitor's experience.
What is difficult for people who were born blind is that they can visualize only things they can touch, and everything was on a large scale. It's very difficult for them. And it's, for example, with buildings. You had this Karlštejn here, and then it was, of course, for you easy, but it's very difficult for them.
Onwards, the next part of our session involved meeting one of my host's colleagues in the dark and answering several questions in which I speculated about her appearance and age.
My colleague Renata Rudská.
Hello, nice to meet you.
Don't worry.
From my experience in radio, I know that people are usually very, very different from their voice. Often they don't look at all the way that I imagine them, so I guess here that I'll build an image that doesn't have to have any kind of link to reality. But I'll say that I think that Renata has shoulder-length hair or slightly less mm-hmm. than shoulder-length. I would say a darker brown and dark eyes.
Then, however, I was asked a question that threw me for a loop. Did I think Renata was blind? It hadn't occurred to me until that moment. I had heard her approach in the darkness without the slightest bit of hesitation, and yet not realized that, for her, the loss of sight was a permanent condition. I did, however, guess the color of her eyes and hair. Don't ask me how.
Hair was brilliant.
Helping people come to terms with blindness is one of the most difficult tasks professionals like Renata and Lenka can possibly face. It's no wonder under such circumstances that many patients need counseling to learn how to go on. And there are no easy answers. Lenka Svobodová again.
When you lose your sight and you were a person who was loving books, painting, etc. So it's very difficult for you to accept, to learn how to live with it, that it doesn't bother you too much. Because it's difficult to accept this part of you. The question if Renata is blind or if she is not blind, I just put you... Because it's the, again, one thing you never think of person if she's handicapped or not. It's always you're thinking about voice, if she can be young, if she's pretty or something. But you are not worrying about blindness or any other kinds of handicap.
The last part of the lesson was conducted with the lights on. In the end, I was given the chance to closely examine how a kitchen for the visually impaired should be designed. But I did so through a variety of goggles replicating various illnesses, in all cases reducing vision to an absolute minimum. Tunnel vision was one, or the opposite, when the center of the eye was left blotted out by darkness, leaving only peripheral sight. In all honesty, I cannot imagine what it must be like to live with such afflictions. My own feeling was one of desperation, almost fury.
It whites out everything. It whites out the whole space.
It would be difficult to do something here.
No doubt one of the points of the whole exercise is to understand that being visually impaired involves a great measure of courage, but just as importantly, it helps you realize that there are many different levels or stages of blindness which require specific approaches and solutions. Someone, for example, with very poor sight, but sight nonetheless, is likely to require special lighting at home, spread evenly and softly throughout. Hot spots, as I saw for myself through the goggles, burn out large areas of visibility. blanketing the world not in darkness, but in light. Proper contrasts of shade and color also help make objects and surface space far more accessible. Objects or tools also need to be designed with simplicity in mind. In the end, I was able to experience for at least an hour or two a sliver of what it's like to lose something we all take for granted. It's not an experience I'll soon forget. Lenka Soborova says her work is humbling, and I think it's easy to understand why.
Of course, it's very difficult because we start in a hospital as well sometimes, because we cooperate with eye clinic here in Prague, and we can get phone call from doctors that there is a client who after operation will not see. So, and we have to immediately go there and just introduce ourselves. And so I think what is important on my work, it's useful at least for some people.
And that special program was presented by Jan Wellinger. And it's all we have time for today. Please keep writing to us at Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic, or email us at english@radio.cz. And you can check out our website, www.radio.cz. From me, David Vaughan, and all of us here, goodbye.